Welcome, everyone, to the Two Interns and a Boat podcast. My name's Alex White, and my co-host here...
I'm Luke Farnard.
We are in our little boat again for this week, and today we have a very awesome guest with us. A teacher of the 1,500-year-old game of chess. He's got his own YouTube channel called The Chess Giant and teaches chess at local schools and is currently working on his second online course. Give a nice round of applause for Solomon Riddell. There we go.
Crowd loves him.
A fan favorite. Wow.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for being with us. So, our first order of business today on our episode is to get to know you and what you do. So we introduced your chess channel, just give a brief little overview of your chess channel and what you do exactly.
Good to see you again, by the way. In terms of what I'm doing now, I'm doing chess full time. I majored in college with Bible theology ministry. And I'm currently basically just doing chess. The foundation of what I'm doing is YouTube, but out of that YouTube channel, The Chess Giant, I've been doing, private lessons with students, coaching locally, and working on online courses as well. So yeah, that's just what I've been up to.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That is sick. I told you that on my Twitch channel, I stream chess, but not, I know you're like really good. You're international master, right?
Not quite. Yeah, I'm trying to hit national master. So that's the next.
Yeah, what's your ELO?
ELO 2150.
Oh my god. Yeah. I just made it back to 400 last Friday. So
I know how the pieces move. I don't really play chess too often, but it's really impressive to see high level play.
That's 2100. Oh my gosh. The highest person on my channel that I've played was like 1700 and mopped the floor with me. But 21, dude, I can't even imagine. So I guess like our second question is, how did you get into chess?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I basically, I was in Cub Scouts for like maybe a month. I don't even know if I was in it that long. But one of the things that you could do to like get a little pin or whatever was playing a chess tournament. So we were trying to get little pins on our belt or whatever. And, because of that, my dad taught me how to play. And then basically once he taught me how, I was just hooked. Since day one, I was just super into it. Love the game. And then, my grandfather, my dad's dad, he was into chess as well. And he's a jader. So he goes and searches for jade and stuff like that. So he had a sick piece of jade, that he kind of sculpted himself. And he told us that whoever beats him first would get it. So then there was like a challenge there too of, can I get good enough to beat my grandpa? So that took a while, but yeah, once I did, I got the piece of jade and, just kept going from there. So.
Whoa. That's what was the, what did he sculpt out of the jade? Just out of curiosity.
With this one, he just put it in the tumbler. So it was just like a perfect ball. It was almost the size of not quite the size of a baseball, but getting closer to that. And it was green. So it was a super nice piece. Definitely had to, go through them a few times before I got a win. So
do you specifically remember like the checkmate? Like, cause that's like definitely like a big deal, like in your chess story where you're like, could you like retell like how you beat him?
It's funny. I can't like literally at all. I do remember one game where I could have won and I missed the mate in one. And then he showed me how I could have checkmated him and that hurt, cause I was really close, but yeah, I do have some older memories of like exact positions. Not in that circumstance.
Well, our second question is because you said that you graduated with a theology degree or from the theology ministry. I could totally be mispronouncing that, but you were not expecting hold up. Take two. All right. This is the episode of take twos. My apologies. But my question is, when you graduated school, did you ever expect to be pursuing chess full time like you are right now?
Yeah, I basically planned for that from the moment I got to Biola. You know, this answer or whatever might be a little bit too in depth, but basically I was playing basketball at UC Irvine for 2 years, and that was a Division I school. And going into UCI, my plan was, you know, to try to go pro for ball, for hoops. But I ended up realizing that I didn't love the game. And I honestly had a really bad experience at UCI with the coaches and them being, you know, abusive in certain ways. So I actually just quit basketball altogether at UCI. But then I decided, you know, maybe at a smaller school, I could enjoy it more. And from that point, I said no to all Division I's, and, you know, decided to go play at a lower division just so that it's not so taxing year round schedule wise, because the NCAA has rules in terms of that kind of stuff. And then once I got to, you know, probably a little bit before I got to Biola, I kind of was trying to figure out what the heck I wanted to do, because my whole life, you know, I'm 7'1", my whole life I was, you know, trying to make the NBA or trying to go pro or that kind of thing. And, you know, it was probably towards the later half of UCI, but I just kind of prayed, like, God, just give me some direction, give me an idea of some sort, because I really just don't know what to do. And it was kind of a weird period. Like, you know, you hear athletes talking about how they felt like a ghost or whatever when athletes were over and their identity and all that stuff. And, you know, growing up, I was always like, I mean, what does that even mean? You know, feeling like a ghost. But I truly did. Like, it was truly a very strange feeling to not be playing hoops anymore for a while and just trying to figure out what I'm doing. Of course, I returned to hoops, but, you know, I felt like God kind of gave me that idea of having a YouTube chess channel. And, you know, when I rolled up to Biola, I forget if I had already posted a video or if I posted a video right when I got there. I remember at one point I was at like 50 subs, right around the first day. So very new to YouTube at the time, but my plan was basically to just grind out videos until I graduate. And then once I graduate to try to go full time with it. So, thankfully I've been able to do that. For those listening, you know, making a living off of YouTube itself is extremely difficult. And I can't do that personally at the moment. Like, you know, I do make a little bit with AdSense, but not enough. But I do make enough through, you know, getting students through the channel, selling courses, that kind of thing.
I also know that your channel made like a huge milestone recently. Like how many subs? It was,
yeah.
Oh, dude. I forget. Darn.
That
makes me mad.
No, you're good. You're totally good. I recently passed 25,000 subs. Congrats. So yeah, thank you. That was a cool milestone. It's kind of my goal to hit 100,000 and get that silver play button. Eventually one of my goals. So, it was cool to hit the quarter mark.
Do you stream as well as do YouTube?
Yeah, I haven't really gotten to streaming yet. It's kind of a different world, streaming versus video making, but I would like to stream. I just gotta, you know, basically get around to it, get the new gear, all that kind of stuff. I'm working on my second online course right now. I don't know if you guys have heard of the hippopotamus defense.
Oh, I have. I accidentally used it like two weeks ago in my stream, and one of the guys.
Oh, nice.
He was. Yeah. It was like, yo, you used that. And I was like, what? I was like, I thought he was trolling me.
I don't know what it is, but it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah. So my first online course was on the hippopotamus defense. And then my second one's on the Ponziani opening, both of which are just kind of ways to start out the game. And just trying to help players improve that area of chess, which in chess, there's a ton of different areas, just like any kind of sport, physical sport, you know, but yeah, eventually I'd love to get around to streaming.
That's phenomenal, dude. I respect it. So I only stream on Twitch. I just don't have enough time to like edit the YouTube videos. That's why I like Twitch personally, because I just hit the record button. I don't have to worry about that. But I tried doing like a YouTube Shorts series, and some episodes did really well, and others like, of course, failed. But but no, YouTube is a completely different world from Twitch.
Yeah. How do you even get I know YouTube, like there's searchability, there's click through rate, there's the title, there's the tags, all this stuff. With Twitch, like how do you grow?
So for me personally, how I've grown my Twitch channel is just through like consistency live streaming. So I have a schedule. The thing, so one thing that might help you actually a lot is because you already have this following on YouTube and you're like, hey, I'm going live. A lot of those people will be like, oh, like, let me go watch him and hang out with him.
Right.
For me, it was the opposite. I was like, oh, I'm just going to hit live. And then I just had to like kind of promote a lot of my stuff. But it was also like a lot of the viewers. So like now I've been averaging on Fridays for chess, which is really funny. It's been like my most popular ones. I get like 7 to 8 people sometimes. Okay. But on like other videos, it's like 3 to 4. So I'm like still like very, very small. But it's literally just all consistency. And just having like that setup schedule and having your viewers know like, hey, like I'm going live from like, I normally go like 10 to 12 or like 10 to 1. So,
sure.
But streaming, streaming's really a grind.
No, it, dude, it is a grind. I remember I missed, so chess was actually how I got like a lot of my viewers too. A lot of the people were like, oh, like he plays chess on Fridays, but then like, right now, I'm doing a lot of Fortnite just because, like, Fortnite and BattleBit, those are kind of the only two games. But a lot of people would watch me play chess, and I'm no chess genius. Like, I'm like, the meme on my channel is they call me the 400 level chess champion. And so it is, you are not getting any high level gameplay. It's all commentary, me blundering stuff, very typical 400 chess. And people are like, oh, this guy's kind of funny. Let me watch him on some of his other streams. So
that's cool.
That's how I do it. But yeah, no, you with you having like a solid like YouTube following, people will be like, oh, let me go watch him and hang out. Yeah. So, but it's a completely different vibe. Like it's.
Yeah.
But it's a fun vibe. Yeah. I personally enjoy live streaming a lot because you get that interaction.
That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. At some point, if you want, maybe we could do a little collab or something and I could. Maybe I can play the hippo against you a few times or something like that.
I have to. So for all of our viewers, I came up with this idea. And Solomon, I want to pitch it to you. I'm thinking, you know, the PogChamps tournament that they have?
Yeah.
So we do that. But instead of getting big streamers, we get like 400 level people, like people below like 800 and like new people and have it be like a new person only tournament. And I think that would be like really fun to stream.
So, that'd be fun. Yeah, maybe you could have like a commentator or something.
Yeah, so
that'd be fun. Yeah, that'd be awesome. I love that idea.
I think it'd be really fun, especially because I know there was some drama in the chess community a while ago when it first started streaming on Twitch, and how a lot of like high upper players were very torn between like, oh, like look at all these like streamers like take this game and just kind of like play it and not take it seriously in a sense. So what's your kind of opinion on that as like a chess streamer?
You mean like the seriousness of it and that kind of thing?
And just it going like becoming a little bit more mainstream than it has been in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I love chess, so I think it's awesome that it's been growing in popularity. I mean, you know, chess has always been around. Almost everyone I've talked to knows what chess is, even if they don't know how to play. But yeah, I mean, I think Queen's Gambit definitely gave chess a boost. I think funny enough, some of the recent controversy with like Hans Niemann, if you guys know anything about that, you know, the potential cheating scandal that, you know, probably gave chess a boost as well. You know, cause you got Elon Musk and all these, you know, Joe Rogan, all these guys reacting, to kind of what's going on. For me, I mean, I think, you know, I think chess really is just a game at the end of the day, right? It's just a game and it's a fun game and it's a game I'm passionate about, but it is just a game. So, you know, I think there's kind of room for everyone to enjoy it in their own way. You know, like for basketball, I'm not going to tell people, you know, only play basketball if you're trying to go pro, or only play basketball if you know all the info, you know, concerning the league and stats and all this. Like, you know, there's people that like to just go play and shoot around at the local gym or even outside. Right. So same with chess. I mean, you know, I think, there is room for people that really want to compete competitively in tournaments and stuff like that. And then there's room for people who, like yourself, right. 400, just having fun streaming online. Like there's really no no wrong way to do it, in my opinion.
Wise words. So bringing it kind of back to the theme, we like to interview Christian people and what they do. And so our, I guess, like the big question of this episode is, what are some ways that you've invited Chess into your YouTube channel, into your platform, and just give, I guess, some strategies for other people who are kind of looking to do the same thing, not necessarily with Chess, but like other, more of like that streaming influencer vibe. What are some, I guess, what are some takeaways that you've learned over the years?
Just like inviting God into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. I think, you know, for myself, it can be very interesting, right? When you're trying to run a business, and follow God. And I think, you know, I've been trying to balance the both hand in hand. I mean, as a Christian, you know, God is, you know, at the center of my life. And when he's not, right, it's always a fight. Like, okay, I gotta, you know, I gotta put God first and, you know, really put everything under, his reign, right, under his authority, and give him everything that I have, good and bad. And you know, I think with Chess, I mean, really this whole thing, I really do think was spirit led. You know, I was praying at UCI, right, for an idea in terms of what I could do with my life. And a couple minutes later, maybe a minute later, I got this idea about being a, you know, a YouTuber, right? And my entire life, I never thought once about doing YouTube. It's kind of weird looking back. I'm like, why didn't I think of it? But literally, like, my whole life, I just did not think of it once. And, you know, since then, God has been opening doors, and it's been a good way to connect with youth, I've noticed. Like, I worked at, I don't know if you guys have heard of Forest Home, but I worked at Forest Home for a summer. And, yeah, it's just like the more things that you're kind of involved in, the more ways you have to kind of make a connection with people. And, you know, at Forest Home, I did this thing where if anyone beat me, I'd have to buy their whole cabin milkshakes.
Oh, and, did anyone beat you?
Thankfully, I did not lose. I got close a few times, cause those milkshakes, there are like $8. Yeah. So, I did meet a lot of people there and got to, you know, and that's the thing with Chess, right? When you're sitting across the board, you get to conversate, talk about God, talk about really anything. And recently I've been kind of helping out, teaching in schools, for the Train, Children Chess Academy, which is in, LA, based, in SoCal. And the boss, Josh, he's a very, you know, strong, you know, believer. And, it's been awesome getting to know him. And a lot of the people that work for him, including myself, are also Christian. So, you know, we try to ingrain, you know, Christian principles into the schools that we're going to, you know, the kind of things we're sharing. And there's even moments too, where like, you know, we can bring God into the picture, right? Bring God into the picture and kind of God's, commandments for how we're to live and, you know, how that is beneficial to us, right? In terms of, you know, what God's commandments aren't there to, you know, bind us down, but to free us up. So all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Were you raised in the church, or did you come to faith later on?
I was raised in the church. Yeah. I was raised, at the time it was called the Socios Christian Fellowship. Now it's called the Well, but, my home church up in Los Socios, which is in San Luis Obispo, California. I was born in that church and have, just grew up a Christian, and really I've been a Christian my whole life. Nearly my whole life. But of course with that, I've, learned a lot and grown in certain ways and still have a ways to go in others. But yeah,
as do we all.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were from SLO. Dude, that's sick. I love SLO. I went up there like 2 years ago for the first time. I'm like, oh, dude, nice. I wish I could live here. I was like, this place is so sick. We went to downtown SLO. We went to this pizza place. Shout out.
What's
I don't know. I totally forget. I have two friends who go to Cal Poly SLO. But I totally forget the name of the pizza place, but it was so good. We were like, dude, this is great.
Yeah. It was probably Woodstock's, is my guess.
Probably.
But yeah, there's a, yeah, Slow's awesome. It's expensive, but it's a cool vibe.
Yeah. It's got that weird, yeah. It's like young downtown, yeah. But also like super right. outdoorsy as well. Like, oh, the beaches mm-hmm. are so yeah. nice. We went off-roading. Yeah. Oh my gosh, right. dude, it was so scary. Have you guys ever yeah. been off-roading?
No, not really.
I haven't, but I have friends that have in that general area, right? Because you got the dunes yeah. and the mountains and everything, and yeah, it's crazy.
Nah, dude, I was terrified. I was praying in the car. My friend, he joined the off-roading club at San Luis Obispo, and
okay, yeah,
he all these guys had like these super nice, like decked out like cars, and he yeah. just had like yeah. his stock Tacoma. And they took us on some like crazy trails. And my friend halfway through was like, this is the first time I've ever done this. And I was like, I'm dying. I'm like in the front wow. seat of this car. And like, we cannot see like over the hood. That's how like steep the climb was. And I was like, we're dead.
Right. And it's not like this guy had experience, right? Yeah. Like this was his
time. That's something you'd like to know like before you start going the trail.
No, I was like, dude, I was like, this is what they decided to do for my birthday. Yeah. They were like, oh, we're gonna do this and it's gonna be so much fun. And I was like, we're never doing this ever again. I was like, yeah, have me choose next time. I was like, I'd rather go to the beach and just chill.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the kind of telling you it's his first time. That's kind of the information you want to hear once it's done. Yeah. Right? Once it's behind you.
It's like a pilot flying a plane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They're like, oh, I've never done this before.
All right, but ladies and gentlemen, does anyone know how to land this thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously. Oh, that's so cool though. So what's like the one like go-to chess story that you love to say or like just tell, like something like super crazy that's happened to you at like a tournament or just on like your online course or at a school?
Mm-hmm. Wow. In terms of a chess story, I'd probably say the one I told you already, which was the jade piece. Yeah, because that's kind of what got me into it. And I have three younger brothers, and that's, you know, once I got that piece of jade, then he'd bring out another piece of jade and go, whoever, you know, not Solomon, whoever beats me next will get this one, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, so that got us into it quite a bit. And as a kid, I mean, I have a lot of good memories in terms of traveling, and you know, I was pretty intensely involved in tournaments and stuff. I think to this point I've played in 100-something tournaments.
Whoa.
That's crazy. Tournaments are pretty intense and they're pretty long too, so like, you know, they can go from one day, but most are like two days, most are two, and then some can go 3-4, you know. And once you count travel and stuff, I think the furthest as a kid I went was Tennessee. I was 8 years old and I played in the, I forget what it's even called. I think it's Super Nationals, but it happens every 4 years and it's like the biggest youth event for chess in the country. And there's always thousands of kids there. And I mean, I don't even know how many people cause their whole families come. But on the way there, we got stuck in a storm. The pilot kind of warned us that we were going to go into a pretty intense storm, and our airplane was repeatedly hit, struck by lightning.
Jeez.
What?
And yes. And I was 8. So at the time, I just, you know, I don't know. I just wasn't fully, you know, there, right? I mean, obviously you're still developing. So at the time, I mean, I was just like, this is awesome. Like, I was like, it was honestly so cool because the plane, like, when one of the wings would get hit, like, the wings would literally, like, we were literally going like this while we're flying.
Well, so, like, going side, you were like side. Dropping a bunch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we were all over the place. It felt great. It felt fun. Right. I don't think I'd enjoy it now, but, at the time I definitely did. And everyone around me, like my mom, I was with my mom. She was freaking out. She was like crying. Other people were screaming, but
you have your hands up. You're like, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that was my first time flying too. So my first time flying to that chess tournament.
Now it's like, this is normal, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, seriously. Yeah. I. And since then I haven't been in a storm like that, but it's, it was fun.
Well, at least you had a good time.
For me. Yeah. Yeah,
the, exactly. The ticket was worth your buck.
That's
so funny. So what's like your dream chess set? Like, if you could have like any, like, don't even think about budget. Like, if you can just have like the pieces and the I guess the board be made out of like any material, what would it be?
I would probably get pieces made of gold and the board too. That way they're worth a lot of money. That's probably why I'd do it, in all honesty. In terms of like a chess set that exists, like, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I'm actually pretty happy with the set I have. Like, I have a wood set. I bought it for like, I don't know, wood sets go from like 60 to, you know, 100, or actually they go pretty high up, but most wood sets are like 60 to 150 ish. So I was somewhere in that price point. Yeah, I like wood. There's, you know, plastic's very popular, that kind of stuff. But it's kind of weird. The more expensive chess pieces get, the more weird they get, right? In terms of like, you know, it's like art, right? It's like, and honestly, the more expensive it gets, it's like, I don't even know which piece is which at a certain point, because it just gets more and more modern and, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, I'd probably pick something historical. Like, if there's a historical chess set that was played between, you know, two players and there was still a set, that's probably what I'd go with.
Luke, what's your dream chess set?
Geez, I don't even know. Probably something like ivory, just looks cool. I'm not like deep into the game. It's just like, it'd be there for like display.
Yeah, totally.
I'd go with Lego. Yeah. The Lego.
Nice.
Yeah. Just like the, but like not like the Lego minifigure chess set, like actual like pieces made out of Lego. I think that'd be kind of sick. Okay. But yeah, so I think we're going to move on to the basketball segment, because you're a huge basketball fan and you got that Lakers hat going on for all of our audio listeners.
Yeah. Oh, we got another Laker fan here. Let's go.
Yeah. I'm a Utah Jazz guy myself, but they're not looking too good.
They're in a rebuild.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate the Jazz. So at least he didn't say the Celtics or something.
Oh, no. Not the Celtics. I knew one guy. Oh, man, he's a huge Celtics fan. I was like, how? Yeah.
Everyone knows who Celtics fans are, right? They make it very known.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was like one of the first things. Yeah. That was the first thing he told me. He was like, oh, do you like basketball? I'm a Celtics fan. And I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
I was like.
Yeah, that's like textbook.
So what's your early finals pick for this coming season? What's like your early finals pick for like this coming season?
Ooh. I'm probably going to go Nuggets again.
You think they're going to repeat?
Yeah, I think they probably will. I mean, they're just so solid.
They did lose Bruce Brown, which he was pretty big in the playoffs for them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I'd probably go Nuggets again. They're just solid. And then on the East, it's such a toss-up.
Depends if Heat get Dame.
Definitely not.
Depends if the Heat get Dame, too. That could shake things up.
Totally. Yes. A ton. Yeah. If the Heat get Dame, then, yeah, I'd have to rethink. At the moment, I would probably – oh, gosh. I mean, I'm not going to pick the Sixers ever. Yeah, I'm more confident in the Nuggets. Even though I'm not a Nuggets fan,
I might make the switch to the Nuggets, be a bandwagon for a bit.
Yeah.
So, just, not that far from Utah. Yeah.
I know. That's what my friend was telling me that. He was like, "Why are you a Jazz fan when you can just root for the Nuggets?" And I was like, "Oh no!" I was like, "The Jazz have a sentimental place in my heart because we would go to Utah and like ski there like a couple times, and my dad's like a huge basketball nut, and it was funny because one of the times we went to Utah, the Sixers were playing the Jazz." And so he was like, oh, we have to go. And so we went. Yeah. And I was like, of course, I was like super young. So I was like, I'm going to root for the team that my dad doesn't want to win. And of course, the Jazz lost.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like really funny. But that's how I became a Jazz fan. But now I'm like, since they cleaned house, I'm like, ugh. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. They do have a lot of history with, you know, Stockton and Malone and, yeah. You know, going up against Jordan and stuff.
Yep.
But how do you guys feel about the Anthony Davis $62 million a year contract?
I mean, you kind of have to give it to him for the Lakers, just for like if you need to trade him in the future.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm gonna be honest, I don't really keep up with a lot of sports, so I'm like
Yeah.
I mean, like every year, like, someone's like the new highest paid athlete ever in basketball.
I know. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Since the players lockout thing, I feel like, yeah, contracts just keep going up and up.
So in like 5 years, they'll be like, yeah. Oh, he didn't get paid that much.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. The stuff I do know about Anthony Davis, I feel like he's always like either hurt or like crying, you know?
He does get that rap. He has played more games than Kawhi, but like he still needs to be a little more available.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm not like a hater on Davis, but I don't know. I mean, he's good. He's really talented, but I feel like he's inconsistent. Obviously this last like Lakers run, like I forgot how many games it was. It was like a ridiculous amount of games where he didn't have a back-to-back 20 point, performance, and he gets hurt a lot. And like you said, he's not Kawhi, but he still sits out a lot. Yeah. So I'm just concerned that he'll like, I'm just more concerned that he'll just get injured or just kind of rest a lot. And, you know, $62 million is a lot of cap space, but yeah, I mean, he is good. So gotta do what you gotta
do. There, now this is definitely like a dumb Alex question. Is there like a maximum amount? Like, does the NBA or like each team get like a budget to give their players? So like with Anthony Davis, he has like $62 million, and then like that's like out of, that's like a certain cut of the pie.
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my understanding is that NBA, each team has a max, and that's put in place so that it kind of makes the league more competitive, right? Because if you go to a big market like LA could pay their guys a bunch of money. Whereas if you go to, you know, a smaller spot, like, you know, a smaller market, like the Thunder or something, like they're not going to be able to compete with LA at all. And from what I hear in baseball, it's not like that. Like you can just pay whatever the heck you want. And that often means that New York and LA gets everybody.
Would you mind giving us like a little like preview of your hippo defense?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Do you want me to like share my screen and show you guys?
Yeah, you can share the screen. That'd actually be sick.
Cool. Yeah. So let me share this. So yeah, the hippo is a, for those that are learning chess or just starting, or if you've been playing for a long time, you'll probably resonate with this. There's so many possibilities. I've heard it said that there's more possible chess games than electrons in the universe. And I'm not a scientist, so I can't really back that up personally, but, yeah, I mean, there's just a crazy amount of possibilities each move. White has 20 to start, black has 20 to start. So like if you play E4, right, there's all these different openings that you can play against. You can play against the French defense, E5, Perk, Scandinavian, Carl Kahn, Sicilian, Alekhines, Nimzowitsch. You could see the St. George. You could see the Modern or the Owens. Like, there's so much stuff. The hippo kind of just gets out of all that opening theory. And basically what we're trying to do is get a position by move 10, in which case we have both of our bishops fianchettoed and both of our knights tucked behind these two pawns. And then we're going to finish it out with these sideline guys as well. So you got six pawns out, barely, two fianchetto bishops, and two knights. And then from this point, you can play. It might seem very passive, and honestly, at the start it is. Like, we're not trying to win this game right away. We're just trying to do our own thing, let white do whatever the heck they want. And then from this point, there's a bunch of different breaks, pawn breaks, piece maneuvers that you can go with that oftentimes are pretty aggressive, but you know, it's kind of just a way to, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing over here. You do what you do. And then we'll start to battle more on the middle game kind of thing.
Is it the reason it's called the hippos? Cause the two pawns on each side. So you have the two on the left, the two in the middle and the two on the right.
Yeah. I'm not totally sure. I think part of it might be that, you know, the hippo is like, at least I've heard this. I don't really know, but you know, the hippo is kind of obviously a dangerous animal, and it's, you know, maybe a little bit underrated or a little, you know, you don't really expect it to be so strong. So I've heard that, but in all honesty, like there's so many weird chess opening names. Like there's the sodium opening. There's there's all these animals, right? We got the kangaroo defense. We got the toilet variation because someone, a GM, made the opening up while, you know, on the toilet. Like there's just all these crazy, just weird names, right? You plug it into chess.com and the official database toilet variation. So I don't know.
What's the one? Is it called the bong rip opening?
The bong cloud.
The bong cloud. That's what it is. Yeah, the bong cloud. Yeah. One of the guys I played against like a month ago was like, mm-hmm. "Oh, do you know what this is?" And I was like, "What?"
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you guys have heard of Hikaru, but he's big on the bong cloud opening and even has like merch and stuff for it. But how long have you been playing chess, Alex?
So the whole story with Chess Day Friday, how it turned into a thing. So I was getting like 2 viewers at most on my streams, right? And I was like, what do I do? I was like, I have no idea like what to stream today. And I had practice in the afternoon. I was like, I just have like 2 hours, like 3 hours. I was like, I'll do solitaire. That'll be super easy. And I didn't download solitaire. And I was like, okay, I'll just go on chess.com. I had like 2 viewers before that. And Twitch always counts you as 1 viewer. So it was like one other guy or like a friend. Right. And I had like 12. And so like, it just like boosted up and like total views for the whole like 2.5 hour stream for that first one, I got like 54. So I was like, I went from like, okay, like getting no one to like some traction, and I got like 8 followers and all this stuff. So I was like, oh shoot. So I was like, might as well, like I personally, just cause I love variety and I love playing a bunch of other games, I can't personally like sit down and do chess like more than one day. But like, I was like, I can definitely like every Friday just come back. And so that's how it started. And I've been doing it. I've taken like some breaks just because of like my summer has been really busy, but I try to do it. I want to, when I get like more followers, I want to get my Twitch logo and put it on a pawn and have like it flexing. And so I've like made like a really bad Photoshop version of that. But yeah, that's kind of how it all started. So it's really fun.
Cool.
Now I have, I have like a Roman helmet that I wear sometimes when I want to be the 400 level chess champion. I had a best of 5 against one guy who challenged me every week. He was from Britain. And we were like, we're going to go and see like who's the best of the best. And I only got 2 games. He like, once you know how to play me, you know how to play me. And I need to take your master class so I can get better.
That's cool.
But yeah, that's kind of how it started. I love it. It's so much fun. It's so chill. And the chess community is awesome. If you guys ever want to like stream, the chess community is sick. Like people, I've had like one person who was like, oh, you suck. But that's like only one person. I'm like, okay, like you get hecklers here and there. I'm like, I know I'm bad. So I'm like, okay. I was like, I do not care. But like everyone's like, oh, can I play against you? Like, this is really fun. And they're like, oh, like you shouldn't have done that. But like next time, like you'll like get better. And I was like, these guys are so nice and wholesome.
Yeah. I feel like chess, I never really got into gaming, honestly, but I hear it can be pretty, pretty intense. Like chess, on the other hand, it's like, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, there's always those people, like you said, that, you know, will talk or heckle or whatever, but most people are pretty chill, pretty nice.
Yeah.
So I just kind of enjoy the game itself.
I've been wanting to go to a tournament just for fun. One of my viewers said that I should like, I don't know how like the tournament would respond. I'd want to get a little bit bigger and have like a little bit of following, but, I'd want to go and do like a vlog kind of thing and record myself at the tournament. I'd probably get out first round, just get like swept and be like, oh, we did it. Like we're here. Post commentary, be like, I should have done some more training, but like they're just better.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with tournaments, so you can't record a competitive actual rated game when it's going on. But what you could do is like, you know, record before and after the game, and you could like play casual games, like they call it the Skittles room, where you can just kind of stream in there, and it's chill, right? Because it's not like USCF official regulation, blah, 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 but it's just like, that'd be fun. Yeah. And if you want to go to one, let me know. Like there's a bunch I could show you the ropes. I think you'd have
fun. Heck yeah. I'd be down. But yeah. So the final thing on the itinerary is we like to ask ChatGPT questions because ChatGPT is our friend and does my papers. Not really. Doesn't do my papers. I do my own papers. But it does a lot of other people's papers. But the ChatGPT question of this episode, just because we were talking about games and sports and stuff, I thought it was really fitting. What if you could add a new wacky rule to a popular sport, what would it be?
Okay, this is like a pretty big rule change. So just, you know, I know people that love basketball are going to go at me. Okay. Just answer the question here. But I do think it would be interesting if instead of overtime for basketball, and maybe we don't, I don't know, it'd be pretty fun in the NBA. Maybe we don't start it there, but we just start it in some leagues or something. But, you know, like in soccer, right? You have penalty kicks and, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, I hate watching soccer, but I love watching the penalty kicks, right? It's so exciting. What if we had that kind of same idea, but for basketball? So instead of overtime, you got the coach gets to pick one defender and he's got to defend five guys straight. Maybe put like a 10-second shot clock. So the guy's got to make a quick move, put something up. Rebounding, that kind of stuff's fine. Basically it's like, you know, let's say that the Milwaukee Bucks, right? The coach for their defense, they're going to pick Giannis because of his length and athleticism. And then if they're going up against the Lakers, then one by one, they get to go one-on-one against him and see how many they can score out of five, you know, and you could have a lineup like, you know, LeBron, AD, Rivers, you know, like, and I don't know. I think it could be a pretty intense, fun finish.
I think that would be so exciting. That'd be sick. And it'd just be like one after the other and you just have one guy.
Right. Like maybe like a 30-second reset every time or something, like, you know, a 30-second break each time or something. But like, you know, next up we got LeBron and Giannis going at it, right? After that we got, you know, whatever, like, you know, you could have some really fun matchups, especially if it was like, imagine too, if it was like a pivotal game, right, for someone's legacy.
And it went to like on top, a series of seven and then like tied and you would be
right. Like imagine LeBron, like he's trying to get his fifth ring and he has to defend five guys.
Dude, and then it changes up the game. It's kind of like how football has like designated kickers. What if someone, like one team had like a designated, like, okay, like you are our overtime guy. Like we won't play you, but like you will play this. And like, that'd be so sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they were thinking of testing that out at All-Star Game, doing like a 1v1 tournament. Like they talked about it. They haven't like put it forward on yet though.
Yeah. That'd be fun. I think I'd love to see it. Everyone would, I think. But I think my opinion is that it won't happen because players are too scared to get absolutely creamed. And it just wouldn't look good, right? But I don't know. Everyone would tune in. I'd tune in.
The internet would go crazy. The internet would just, like, if someone, like, say if, like, LeBron lost, like, five in a row, dude, he'd get clowned 100%.
Right. Right. And I mean, imagine what that would do for the game of basketball too, like the whole penalty kick idea. Like imagine if LeBron got scored on five times straight.
Yeah, no.
Like that would look bad.
That would look horrible.
Yeah.
Luke, what would you add? Yeah.
I might go to tennis here and just add heckling. I think it'd make it more interesting.
Heckling.
Nice.
Heckling for tennis.
Yeah, like you should be able to heckle like in between the points and like yell at the players.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a video of, I don't know tennis that well, but I saw some video of like someone heckling one of the tennis players and like the guy stopped the match, went over and was like yelling at him. And just like, why not have hecklers?
Yeah,
right?
Like it would get popularity to tennis too. Like it needs to grow a little bit.
Oh, for sure. Maybe hecklers for golf as well.
Cool about golf is that there's a tournament in Arizona. I think it's the Waste Management
Open. They have that one hole.
It's like if you get a hole in one, everyone in the crowd grabs their beers and throws it onto the hole. And just, it's super fun, good for videos and clips, and just makes it more fun to watch.
Yeah, it's like the noisiest, and it's like all these like young like partiers too. Like they're all there, and they're just like throwing stuff on the field. Like it doesn't matter if you get like a hole in, like that. It's just like super. It like it's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a par three, and it's like super short. So like it's pretty easy for the pros to like get a hole in one. There usually is a couple during the tournament.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Dang. It's cool. I would add the no consent to fighting in hockey. So like the players don't have to throw their gloves out. They can just go up and just punch. I think it would turn hockey into just boxing just 24/7, but it'd just be so funny to just have some guy just be on the ice. And then you just see like just from the corner, just this guy just bum rushing him and just like punching him. I think it'd be so funny.
You'd have a lot more enforcers in hockey then.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But that just make it like the fights in hockey are so fun to watch. Like,
That's a sport where they haven't tamed it down to like barely touching each other, right? They still let. I've seen I don't even know hockey. Do you call it referee in hockey as well? Yeah, the ref. Yeah, I've seen the ref just stand there while they fight.
There's like nothing he can do too, because these guys are like way stronger than him, and he's like,
oh yeah. And they got the pucks and everything.
Oh, yeah. Well, our time is up. Thank you so much, Solomon, for joining us on today's episode and talking about chess, basketball. That was definitely – I know it's going to help me as a player. And thank you for beating Luke. more moves than me. So.
Great game. Great to meet you.
Yeah.
But, is there any other thing you want to promote, like where people can find you on YouTube, Instagram, any social media?
Yeah, basically everything that I have is under the Chess Giant. So, you know, I'm 7-1, which is why my dad made the name up. At first I thought it was dumb. And then I was like, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. So yeah, on YouTube, you can just look up the Chess Giant and, I should pop up there. And everything I'm doing, like courses and videos and all that kind of stuff, it will all be through that. But yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you guys in the next episode. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to the Two Interns and a Boat podcast. This episode was produced by Luke Bernard and Alex White. This groovy music was written by the one and only music prodigy Ben Karinger. We want to say a very special thank you to our guest for joining us on our show. Check out and support all their projects. Make sure to check out other podcasts on Lumavoz. Have a great day, stay hydrated, and enjoy the music.